space, the final frontier. These are the voyages of the starship Enterprise. Its five-year mission, to explore strange new worlds, to seek out new life, a new civilization, to boldly go where no man has gone before.
Greetings, salutations, and welcome to Retrek. I'm Captain Jim, and with me, of course, Sir Admiral Elliot.
Hi there.
And Dr. Squee.
Dragon! Dogs only, no cats.
Yes, yes, we've had discussions before we went on air.
By the way, I'm sorry, the cat lovers. Just...
I'm not getting involved in this conversation.
No, that's fine.
No, I'm sorry to the cat owners. It's just there was a shitty.
What we're actually here to talk about is the latest episode of Discovery Season 5, Episode 3, Janal, in which, as we were led to believe last week, we do visit the Trill homeworld. And we carry on with the next stage on our quest.
Just thank God that they were there to crack that code, like, because otherwise we would never have got to Trill. It was just so complicated. Two people living as one. Where could it be?
Yeah. I mean, it's weird because on one hand, you've got this incredibly elaborate scheme by, we thought at first it was just the Romulan, but now we find out it was like a consortium of scientists. And they've got this really elaborate galaxy spanning thing. But also, once you've done the legwork, once you've done the legwork, the actual clues are pretty easy to solve. It's just finding where the clues are.
It's Christmas cracker clues.
And there's also there's scientists involved, like, which we'll get into a bit more in this episode, who, yeah, fair enough, okay, they're trying to protect a secret, but there's loads of other lay people involved who are generationally involved by the seams of things, who just like, well, look, I was just told to tell you a riddle. What am I going to do? I'm not going to ask any questions.
Yeah.
Yeah, he's like that guy out of Back to the Future who turns up with the letter for Doc. He's just like, you know, I've just got to give you the letter.
With him, he's like a religious leader. And I think this is probably like a lot of religions where somebody's come up with something, in this case, 800 years previously, and for no reason, and just go, oh, yeah. Let's make that part of the scripture that the head of the church has to do. Because you do see where they have so many stupid traditions in some of these religious things that they have to keep doing. And it's like, why do you do that? Like, just look at the coronation of the king, all the silly things. And it's like, yeah, somebody objected 400 years ago, so he's got to say them two words. And he's got to say that word in front of that word because someone else objected 500 years ago. And you've got to have this stone to make the Scots happy.
All right, Elliot, don't start me on the coronation, though. I'm still pissed off that the king ruined that magic trick. When the walls came down, he was still there. I mean, just what was the point? But yeah, it's like, also, I love the fact that it's like, well, if you solve this riddle, then you're worthy. Ah, yeah, but like, if we decide someone else comes later and we don't think they're worthy, like, because you don't think they're worthy, then we'll just turn them away, is basically what they say in this episode as well.
Yeah, it's...
Like, that's going against the riddle-based kind of system, isn't it?
Yeah, it's... They act like it's all, ooh, you have to solve the riddles, but it's kind of like if we light luckier when you turn up.
Yeah,
and you solve the riddle.
But now that I'm thinking it's like Back to the Future, it'd be good if like they got there and it'd be like, you know, ooh, I was told one day some crazy old man or a Starfleet captain would turn up asking about this riddle. Funny, I never thought it'd be you. And then it turns out that it's that Trill who killed Michael's original parents or something like two Burnhams with the same gun.
Well, we haven't related this all back to Burnham yet, so I mean it's gotta be coming.
Yeah, in fact that's it now. I want Biff to be the main villain. And I would be very, very happy with that. Anyway, what we actually get is we pick up with on the ship and they're doing a briefing about these two scavengers, and Buck gives us the information about his kind of adopted sort of sister thing.
It's his niece, isn't it? Adopted, close, his niece, well, I think.
Well, he was the protege of her father, so I suppose the closest would be brother and sister.
I would think niece or brother and sister works. Like, it's yeah. that kind of thing. They're kind of, one was raised by the person, one was kind of a...
I think you have to go with Uncle Buck, though, for the John Candy reference.
Oh, yeah, we'll go with Uncle Buck, yeah.
Oh, like that. Man, and it works even better with your accent than mine. It's Buck's kind of a bit more different in my accent.
No, I like that, yeah. And he should go around to see her, and she should be guarding the letterbox and, like, won't let him in.
Please, every time I want to say Uncle Buck, could you guys say it for me? Because it sounds more like Uncle Buck when you say it.
Yeah. Well, what are you on about? It's the same word. Anyway,
in my poor southern accent, it gets corrupted.
Yeah, you have to differentiate words that are different.
Different
letters. I don't see why. But yeah, so this gives Buck a pretext to go on the mission, as if there was any question that he was going to. You know, it's like we're stuck with him now.
Like, you have it though. Burnham even goes, look, I don't. You've shown that you can be compromised in missions when you've got family and that involved.
Yeah.
So I'm not. So I'm hesitant if I should take you. And it's like, oh please, I need this to get better. Oh, okay.
And also classic Discovery, because first of all, they say, she goes, look, I'm going to have to think about this. One scene later, yep, you're coming. Nothing substantially changed. You already gave this reasoning why you should. And if they just left it there and she goes, you know what, fair enough. I can see you're not compromised. Let's go with it. It's worse to leave it one scene that isn't adequate thinking time.
We complained last season. The pace were too slow. Now they're thinking fast.
Yeah, either go faster or slow. Don't go like this. Midway's even worse. Like say I'm going to think about it. Yeah, I've thought about it. It's done. It's like,
well, yeah. So what you're saying is, make decisions over an amount of time that makes for interesting TV.
And makes sense. I mean, there's also, can we also add, I think it's in this first scene that they work out there's the 800-year-old trill.
They do.
Yeah.
Yes, because of the markings. Because
I also, which I like, I love the idea that it's like they're...
Yeah, I think that's cool.
Fingerprint. Perfect. And I think they did even have a mind when they did Dex of putting them in a specific way. Like, it was very purposeful. But the only thing which I have a problem with is that Adira says, I think that, you know, it's like, it's not unheard of, but they could be alive. And after that, it's just a certainty. They go, well, find them and then we're done, you know, and then it's like they find them. There's no
If they'd got there and they're
just not very common, but it's not unheard of. Like, and then they go, well, they're definitely alive after that.
Yeah, if they'd got there and the symbiont had been dead, then they'd have had to cross that bridge, wouldn't they? But I mean, that I've not got a huge problem with, because it's like, let's assume best case scenario.
Yeah, she goes, 800 years, that's a long, long time for a trill to be alive, but it's not unheard of to live that long.
But she doesn't say look for her, she goes, oh, well, just find her then. And it's like, and they find her in that. I don't know, it just seems weird that they set up as rare. And then they don't, like, again, why set that up? Why not just go, 800 years?
Because I think that way you can get rid of everyone who's going, are we going to see Dax? Are we going to see Dax?
Yeah, probably, actually. Or maybe.
Because then you get to Dax being at least 1,000 years old at this point.
Oh, yeah.
That even sets that up as possible. Like, it doesn't.
There's like a throwaway line in DS9 saying symbionts live for X number of years or so. I honestly can't remember, but maybe it's just paying lip service to that.
It's something I've got overhung up on, obviously, which is...
Speaking of DS9, though, have either of you visited Memory Alpha and found out what species Rainer is?
Do you know, I didn't think to do it.
It's the one from... It's one of the ones where Bashir gets...
No,
episode
earlier than that.
It's season one or two.
Season two. The virus is called the Harvesters.
Yeah, I know which episode.
Oh,
it's,
yeah, I know the episode. I'm with you.
Armageddon again.
Where he gets got stuck with Bashir on planet.
So, what's the race called?
Oh, I can't remember name at race.
I thought you were asking us that. That's what I was trying to remember.
No, I was asking you if you remember the episode that they were from.
I half remembered it. I thought it was Armageddon Factor, but
Armageddon. That's original series, isn't it?
Yeah. Isn't
the Armageddon Factor the one where they go to that planet and every time there's a virtual bombing, they have to kill so many people?
It's Armageddon Summer. That might be Armageddon game as well.
No, they haven't done the same title.
The Armageddon. Yeah, it is Armageddon Summer. That one.
I think that's the Armageddon Factor. Anyway, now Raina comes onto the bridge and Michael introduces all of the bridge crew.
I know it's
This
is foreshadowing for something done really badly.
Okay, but I just thought it was very nice of them that they waited until season 5
to introduce for her to introduce the crew.
Yeah, David Williams, who's listening, says, "Do you guys think the Strange New World episode mixing live and cartoon genres actually worked?"
Yes, it was awesome.
I did. Yeah, I thought it worked very well.
I mean, if you please, David Williams, please go back and listen to our episode where we talked all about it.
We did cover it at the time.
A Taste of Armageddon was the
Armageddon, that's it. So what's the Armageddon Factor? Look that up as well. That's an episode
I have made up. It doesn't
All right, well, we're going to buy armageddonfactor.co.uk because somebody's going to make a TV episode with that name at some point. And
so
we've got it.
Oh, sorry. Let me get you.
We were talking about Raina introducing the crew in season 5. Best time to do it.
But yeah, in season 5, and they introduced loads of ones we've never seen before, or
most
of the crew which we have met aren't there, just to really rub salt in their open wounds.
Because they go, you'll meet a Washakun later.
Yeah, exactly.
Oh, we know her. No, not today.
I think this to me adds more kind of like suggestive evidence that there were rumblings that it was going to end, because I reckon Washington was off on another job with Detner and like half the rest of the crew. Was Detner on the bridge?
Has Bryce left? Have we seen Bryce this season at all?
I thought he was on there.
That's Reese.
Have you seen him?
Who's he?
Bryce is the other guy.
I've actually got confused.
I know who you talk about. I've never met these people.
I'm like, is Bryce and Reese the same person? Are they two different people?
Bryce and Reese are two different people.
No. I thought it was Bryce Reese was his name. Or Reese Bryce.
Definitely different. Unless I've met him up. Maybe there's never been a character called Bryce.
Is this like a, what do they call it? The Mandela effect.
Mandela effect. Yeah, we've invented a character. Oh, so David Williams is one of our groupies from SFW.
Whoop, whoop. I think it worked.
Nice to see you.
Yeah,
I agree. It worked, and I think we said at the time it had to be those two shows. Like, if an animated Boimler and what's the name? I've forgotten the name. Mariner turned up in Discovery, the tonal shift would maybe be a bit more, but I think they found a nice middle ground with those specific shows.
I think it really worked with them too.
Well, the fact that Strange New Worlds is a prequel to the original series, which was so psychedelic in nature, it had like that kind of weird vibe to it. I think Strange New Worlds has inherited that, which makes it more apt to crossover.
I think that, they were the right to do it with.
Oh, by the way, we missed out on Trek News. Sorry to I know we've started on the episode. But
we have Trek News.
Well, I mean,
it's not about things getting cancelled. It's like,
Well, it is. Yeah, it's Strange New Worlds.
Strange New Worlds has been renewed.
We've been renewed, and Lower Decks has been cancelled since we last.
Lower Decks is, but they're trying to spin it as it's coming back for its final season. It's like, but you didn't tell us it were final season before.
The only thing I'm hoping is two things. One is that, it would be lovely if someone else bought it, but let's not hold our hopes up that much. But if it does clear the way for Star Trek Legacy, And Lower Decks ends on another great series. It's been perfect start to finish. Like, it's been really great. In fact, I think it's got even better. I think the first series was sort of trying to prove itself too much to be sexual. I know that sounds weird because it's not.
The first season had the problems that it was done during COVID. So you had all the actors never met each other. They were all recording in their cupboards at home. That's why some of it, that Mariner was very, very fast with her delivery because she wasn't firing against somebody. But it's got better once you can tell once they're obviously in the recording studio together.
See, I don't think they always are.
They never bother me, you see.
I think they are at times, but they've obviously got a lot better at it.
Yeah, it's a lot smoother.
Which makes me think that they're in the studio together.
And I think they've got a better blend between making, like, they can use adult humour, but also remembering it's a Star Trek show, I think the first series, just in my ears, was a little bit, I don't know, it's like you had some outright fucking episodes, like, pardon my language.
Yeah, you didn't like that orgy episode.
And I know it's based on The Naked Time and The Naked Now, which are both sexual episodes, but I don't know, there's a weird line, even with adult Star Trek, which from just in my own mind, maybe. But I think they got better at that kind of tonally as it went on. They really have their tone down pat of what it is.
Yeah, they do.
Yeah.
And it is a terrible shame. And there's like a million and one petitions up. So get those signed.
Yeah.
And we will, of course, be covering what we now know is the final season when we get there. It's
and
almost
please,
like.
Do go and sign your petition for Bring Back Enterprise. We're still hoping on it.
Yo, you never know. Yeah, it's almost like we're trying to find other things to talk about. Back to Discovery then. So we're setting up, they've already planted seeds of this, but you get Reno sort of talking to Stamets directly about Adira and Gray and the relationship. And obviously we're going to do something with that.
Can we just give a shout out to Reno being back?
Natara,
she's been very open about the fact that she didn't want to step on set because she's still worried about COVID and stuff. So she's like, her filming got reduced, like, still to this day because that. So it's just great to see her, like, it, like, make it back in the last series, even if that's not it. But
I hope it's
just
not.
Totally on form as always.
She's one of the best characters.
Yeah,
so.
And I love the fact that she says something really nice. She goes like, oh God, that sounded wank or whatever, however she worded it.
Yeah.
It just totally undercuts in the next step. And I love Space Dad as well. It's perfect Space Dad. And I just like to renew the fact that his family are the thing which brings out the humanity in him, particularly when he gets a bit too focused on other things. And it's just lovely.
Absolutely, yeah. And yeah, we get the bit with the Guardian asking the riddle. Do you remember on Crystal Maze where they had that one where you had to go up to the guys? You'd be like, Guardian, where is the crystal? And he'd be like, he's in the shrine that has no tail. And then you had to solve and it were like in the penguin or something. Anyway, if you've not seen Crystal Maze, Google the Crystal Maze. That was.
I just love the sentence. It were in the penguin or something.
Well, it was because
no, I just like that. I don't know.
Three, and you'd get three
you'd
different.
Have cat, you'd have a cat.
And they'd have all the different. Yeah, they'd have all animals, and you'd have to solve it. So you needed the three clues. Anyway, my point
exactly
is
exactly what you meant. But
a
I just
Guardian
posing
in a riddle is very Crystal Maze.
It is.
But Michael solves it instantly. Because it's not very hard, to be fair. It's like, oh, you know that clue you've already found? What were it? Like, you know, it's pretty much what were the last thing we said to you. Anyway, the upshot of all this, though, is that only the original host can help, not just the symbiont. So we revisit an idea from Deep Space Nine, which is the Jantara, where the Trill's previous hosts get to occupy somebody's mind, and all of this is just to give Culber a chance to really chew the scenery, which I'm happy with that because I think he's great in this episode.
At who goes on the away team, the saving grace of this is that they brought Culber, who was a different character on the away team than us just having Burnham and Book again.
Yeah, true.
And I do want to hammer into Colbert, but before we take that however you want, like, he's a very attractive man. But when they're on the bridge, though, and I love the fact that 900 years in the future, suddenly from day one, like, Burnham seems to know everything about this time period. I mean, I know they kind of do the time jump, says she's been there 2 years or whatever.
Yeah, it's been there a while now.
But then you get a basic bit of true knowledge that we know, and she's going, but how might you achieve speaking to someone from over the years? Basically, as exposition, so they can explain. It's like, oh, conveniently, you don't know that one fucking thing, but you know everything.
Yeah, that makes a nice change.
Well, it does, but it seems weirdly inconsistent. It's like, this was something from your time you don't know, but everything from this time period you know, no matter what it is.
Weren't the Trill in there her time? The Trill are first introduced in TNG.
But we don't know when we met them.
But it's been retconned that they talk about Curzon being an ambassador to the Klingons and Inukor and Kang, and we definitely knew the Trill back then.
It just seems funny. But yeah, no, can we get back onto Colbert, though? Because that character is amazing. I could watch it all day, and it's also quite cheesy, but in a good way. He's like, going, welcome, like he's doing Jack Plants as Colbert.
It's
like,
it is. Right.
You're here on my planet. Let's go for a walk before we solve this.
I'm my number one.
I know. And I bloody love it. It's brilliant. It's just more of that. I want to see him, like, have this host within him, like, for half the series, please.
Yeah. No, it is good. And it's always fun when regular cast members get to show you that, oh, actually, they're not just that person. They're an actor and they can play other roles. It's great.
Yeah, and it's just, it's such a fun character, even though it's cheesy. That's, like, saves it. If it'd just been cheesy, I don't think that's enough. It has to be... Also, like, he's a great actor, so, you know,
it works.
So large and ridiculous. It's like when Anson Mount gets to play that character when the Enterprise gets taken over.
Oh,
he gets to be that larger-than-life thing.
Yeah.
So much fun. I love stuff.
And, right, let's cover one of the subplots just all in one, because not much happens. Saru and, I always forget her name, his fiancée. They're having a bit of a row about, well, not a row, but they're talking about how do we announce the engagement and how will it look politically. And
oh, you just muted yourself. Well, we're waiting for him. I love this bit. The only thing which I wasn't sure about. Like, I think this works, and it's nice to see Saru. I'm glad they've kept him in it. But the thing which they're arguing about, like, the trade agreement, everyone seems broadly in favour. Like, it's not a big swing. It's not, like, something ridiculous.
Yeah, it's
controversial. He's going, hey, look, we've delayed something happening in your area, so we're going to step up patrols. Is that cool? Two people vote against it? No problem. It's not a big swing.
Yeah,
like, if you're going to have this big argument, there needs to be a big swing.
It needs to be that he'd done something controversial, and he needed her vote. To get it through.
You needed
a hung vote, and her vote swung it one way or the other, and she voted with him. And then you voted with him politically. But this one you go, no, she voted with every other member of the council. Everyone said this is a good idea.
Yeah, because it's literally like they go, oh, we want to do this. And he goes, well, we can't do that, but how about this? And they go, oh, yeah, that's a good idea as well.
Like, you need at least one of the two objectors to at least go, it's like, oh, this is bullshit. I will not, like, this will not snap. You know, they need to be outraged somehow. And maybe make them a Vulcan fundamentalist, which is what their argument is.
Unless, they were going deliberately for, it's a very minor thing, but when you're in that position of power, you have to really think about the minor things, you know, or something like that. Oh, yeah, David Williams says The Elysian Kingdom, the fairy tale episode with Anson Mount.
Thank
it was
you, David.
Great, yeah. Awesome. But it was a coward.
Anyone who wants to watch it, Google for us, please. We're more than happy with that. by the way, I didn't mean to doubt your knowledge, David. I'm sure you knew that, but, like, just give us the knowledge.
Yeah. So, it's very minor. And I'll tell you what, right? Proper lazy buggers. There's a bit where the Vulcan comes up to him and goes, oh, can I have a word with you in private, Mr. Saru? and they use the personal transporters to transport. Yeah,
it's like
you could have walked up the stairs. You know what I mean? That is just laziness.
Adira, it is Adira, isn't it? The they.
Yes.
Yeah.
I mean, at one stage, I've been calling the bridge. But everyone uses it for everything.
No one
walks in the future.
They're going to end up like the humans in Wall-E if they're not careful. Yeah,
they're not going to get the steps in at all. There's going to be a
not
lot
at all.
People.
Yeah, I mean, I yeah, it's, but I would like to add that I think set in the future where Vulcans and Romulans are as one, so like the Navarans, they can be emotional. I think this woman is the most logical Vulcan they've ever had in Discovery.
In the past, when they had
Vulcans, they were always so... It was what I call pissy Vulcans, which they used in Deep Space Nine as well. The original series and Next Gen were really good at Vulcans. I think Strange New Worlds has been pretty good, generally, between them. But actually, well, no, maybe not. But anyway, that's another story. But yeah, it's like they do better getting Vulcans being more Vulcans when they can be emotional. And she does do a couple of turns of emotion, but she's pretty strictly Vulcan.
And ultimately they decide to announce the engagement and everything. So I feel like that story's ticking along, but we didn't really need it this episode. No, it doesn't really do a lot.
For the extremist, Harry came in.
Yeah.
It didn't make sense that he was complaining she voted with him.
No.
Yeah, I think the only good thing
everybody did.
It should have been written better, but I think though those two are both so charming, I'm glad. Yeah. Like, I'd rather have them in it than not. I just rather have it written better. So yeah, like, even though you're right, it's
better to do.
But I like the fact that now we know this last series, which again, there's so many things which suggest they thought might be on the cards.
Yeah.
I think this is another one where they're steering Saru towards an endpoint, I feel like, and this is.
I feel like they're doing that with everyone. Like it feels like very much like season 7 of TNG. They said, right, the theme's going to be family, and we're going to try and bring in family members for just about every character. It feels like we're doing something similar here.
Yeah,
I know they were being cancelled though when they were shooting these earlier.
Well, but what I was saying earlier is, I think that they had an inkling that it was on the cards.
Yeah,
I know they didn't know. But the way the series is playing out, it really reads like they knew. Do you think Klingons was the best?
No.
Strongly no. Like, oh my God, I've been watching the first series back of Discovery. It's really good. But every time the Klingons on screen, I'm like, not Klingons. They're not like,
they should have called them a different race and it'd been okay.
What we need is the Zack Snyder cut of season 1 of Discovery where it puts the proper Klingons back in.
Do you know what, though? They probably used the pretty boy Klingons, which were very briefly... And in fact, I think it was from Kelvin time.
I was about to say...
Blue eyes and like the
little... Yeah, it's the one from Into Darkness.
Yeah.
Yeah, because the first one, you see them with masks on, I think. So you do see them very briefly. And the second one, a cut scene, you've got really pretty boy Klingons. And it's
very much like the Persians from 300.
And you know what?
See, Zack Snyder cut again.
I'd fucking take them over the Series 1 Discovery Klingons. They are the worst abomination. You even get to see Klingon boobs in that, which is just weird. I can never... say it, I have not seen Klingon boobs since then, like, you know, in their full Klingon boob.
Nope, yeah, very much so.
Hang on,
now we've talked about Saru being lazy, beaming up to the thing. I tell you who's not lazy though, Janal, because he's like, right, we're off for a walk.
Yeah,
come on,
I didn't make a map, I just remembered the landmarks.
I'm gonna take it. It is a lovely day. I feel like a walk.
So good.
This is where we get the backstory. So, presumably shortly after the episode, The Chase, they assign some scientists to come together and try and solve it more. And, yeah, so that's where they found the technology of the progenitors, and that's what's been hidden. So that, for me, addresses a bit of an issue I had last week, which was, like, this Romulan guy's gone to a ridiculous extent.
Well, to me,
whereas
it makes sense
if it was a group, it makes more sense.
In a way, it makes sense that you've got, like, a Romulan, someone from Federation, and there'll be somebody from Klingon and all that as well involved in this.
Yeah, yeah.
Because it'd be like, let's have a scientist from each of the races that know what's happened.
Absolutely, yeah. So yeah. No, I'm more than happy with that, and I feel like it makes the concept a bit less silly that it was a consortium doing it rather than one rogue Romulan guy.
Yeah.
I mean, the only thing I would say is, like, I mean, I kind of like the puzzle idea, which they put in there, which is coming up in a minute, but I kind of wish just there was more feeling that it was all driving towards one thing. It still seems a bit disparate. Like, you know, the only thing which is really pulling it back to the same thing is like little puzzle pieces at the end where, you know, and I know they talk about progenitors a lot, but it's like, it still just doesn't seem that kind of driving feel that I want of, like,
I think because, you know, we don't,
the only menace we're getting, the only drive we're getting for time is to, as you guys said last week, to very B-list baddies is the
And I think because we don't know what the technology is, like, they speculate, oh, it's this great technology and it could create life and blah blah blah, but we don't actually know what it was. Oh, David Williams says, what about the dancing Klingons in Subspace Rhapsody? They were great.
That's how you K-pop do proper Klingons. K-pop.
Yeah.
Yeah. And the fact they only had it for like a couple of lines was
perfect. Yeah, that was fun.
It was enough for a fun, but you didn't have them doing it throughout the whole episode. Genitors and characters.
I think it was I think it is a culture.
Yeah,
I think. Because you've even got the General Federation now don't know what's going on. This is like a top secret mission. Discoveries on people don't know.
Yeah, I think about the events of the episode, the chase, were not made public. So
I'd even say I'm guessing that there was also, is it, did they call it black or red directive?
Red directive.
I reckon there was also a red directive when Discovery appeared, which, in the future, when they were first seen, because of the same kind of thing. There would only be a select few people somewhere deep in the Federation probably knew about it, but in general it had been...
Okay, I'm going to put this out there, and I'm sorry if this ruins anything for anyone, but Red Directive, it sounds almost like a euphemism for that time of the month. Like, what's wrong with Captain her? Red Directive.
Captain Burnham's on a Red Directive. You sexist pick.
I'm sorry. It was just the
first
thing that popped
into my head. No, not you. No, I'm saying
in dialogue. No, I know.
Yeah, yeah.
But I'm sorry now if anyone can divorce the title from that image. But
look, if it helps anyone, just to make it a bit less sexist, I suffered from piles. The other day I had a very big Red Directive. Like, the toilet was it was like the elevator from The Shining.
That's a black alert, but...
No, it was very red. There was
very red
blood everywhere, okay. I'm telling you.
Okay, so now we get the biggest revelation of the episode, because Raina's doing these interviews with everybody, and we find something out about Reese.
Yeah, we do. But can I answer this, though? The only thing... I quite like this. I like the idea that... But the execution, to me, at the end, as opposed to... Because, again, can we handle this in one chunk?
Yeah.
We did the other plots. Because, to me, at the end, I don't mind Tilly teaching him a lesson about connecting on a better level, because he showed off that he retained all the information. But I like, actually, a little respect. I think this should be much more two-way. So at the same time when he learns from them, they should be learning from him, because he did.
Yeah.
Like, this person's running into ships. He could be in command. Like he could be in the command program. He's actually talked about bringing them out. So praise him on doing something right, as well as damning him for
and
not
connecting. And it speaks to Raina's strength as a captain, particularly in war times, that he's able to quickly get what he needs from everybody quickly make assessments and know who's right for what job.
And so let's face it, like, you know,
a very good thing.
Burnham could learn something about being a bit more stoic as a captain from him.
And could learn a bit about letting us get to know the supporting characters.
The annoying thing about this is we have this opportunity to get to know our supporting characters through this new character they brought in. Before we know all our supporting characters. And they get 20 words.
Yes, and that's 20 more than they've ever uttered.
No, I know it is, but it was like, Are you taking the fucking piss? After five seasons, we're going to find out something about them. And you're giving them one fucking sentence?
Yeah, okay, it could be viewed that way.
But I don't.
I have viewed it that way.
But the thing is, again, I don't think this episode's the problem. It's all the other episodes. Where
yeah, it's all the other episodes leading up to it. Yeah,
exactly. But it's that sort of like, and I don't mean from Rick. I'm not having to go at this episode. This is having to go at the creators, the producers,
the
story writers. That this is that they think this is all right. That you've not taught us anything about these characters for five seasons now, and you're going to give 20 bloody words each and 30 seconds on screen to do it. It's like have a word with yourselves.
Can I also throw in when Burnham near the beginning says to him, it's like, oh, connection's a choice, not a skill. It's like, isn't it both? I mean, it is a choice to connect to people, but also it's a skill you can hone and get better at.
Yeah, to be able to make connections, yeah, can be a skill.
LLAP, David, got to go. We'll catch
you. Thanks for joining us, David.
Yeah, thank you.
You can catch the rest of the episode on YouTube on your catch-up.
Or on or an audio. The podcast, exactly.
Yeah. So yeah, it's both. I mean, like again, it all. This is Discovery's. I think one of its biggest problems is it's so absolute in like everything has to be about emotion. And don't get me wrong, I love emotional connection. Star Trek's always been really great about it, but it's not all about emotional connection. There are some things about when you're running a starship, you have to have some discipline. You have to have some kind of like a chain of command. You have to have tough decisions where maybe you have to fight between your emotionality and your need to get the mission done, which they show in loads of other Star Treks really well. And it's just always, no, emotion always is everything.
And if you need to learn how to make connections, you just sing a little song about it. We know that. So
your crew. I mean, I heard that in my head.
Exactly. So there we go. Right. So the actual crux of the mystery then is they get to this place, there's big beasties, and they're not happy. And that's the thing. Now, first thing is they planned this 800, 900 years ago. What if these things had moved on? Well, you know, what if they no longer lived there when they came back?
I think you've got it that they've probably been living in this area forever.
Well, yeah, but it'd be funny if it had got on there and gone, oh, no, there's no.
And it's probably because Trill is a developed world, this is probably a nature reserve that's being preserved to be.
Maybe.
It's just outside the Trill pits or the symbiote pits, which we know is sort of like protected area and all that. So it's probably that whole area is preserved. It's like a nature reserve. And there'll be huge dome-like shields, I imagine, holding all this in.
Really thought about this.
Because do you really want stealth beasts that can fire phasers at you or photon torpedoes? I haven't decided if the phasers or photon torpedoes to fire in. walking out and deciding, oh, let's go for a walk down the street here.
It's also, like, Elliot's theory, I think, is the winning one, but I'm just going to throw it out there. That's about, like, the 20th species they've tried to keep alive there. Like, they were gone. There were, like, space whales. Like, this one's like, oh, for Christ's sake, we've killed all the other ones. I'll bring this one in. Like, just every time one dies off, they bring a new deadly foe to have a bit of a challenge with.
I want to, like, call this out for being good Star Trek, because this is a very... It's almost Route 1 Star Trek, but yeah, the conundrum basically is you've assumed that they're hostile, you've got to find the reason for it and come to a peaceful conclusion, which that in and of itself is great Star Trek, and it ties in nicely to the idea that they only want the best people to find the progenitor technology. So I like that.
I feel like it's a great Star Trek idea, very poorly delivered. But like you say, it's kind of very Route 1. The way it's kind of executed, it's like, oh, there's eggs. Let's go. I mean, it's maybe if they were about to shoot what they thought was rocks and like, wait a minute, I've got like build up a bit more.
Yeah, it could have been more dramatic. But what they did do is they took the time to rip off dialogue from Lethal Weapon with the whole, oh, let's go on three. Wait a minute.
Yeah.
I almost wanted them to acknowledge that's what they're doing because it's like that's such a Lethal Weapon thing.
Well, I mean, forgotten exactly where I was going. Sorry, completely lost my
train. That's fair enough. So, yeah, so that's more or less it. And then they get back to Janal.
We've missed one. You're going back to Janal. Sorry.
They go back to Janal and he says, well, you know, I would have let you die to prove you were worthy, but here you go. It's just under a rock. You can have the next clue.
Well, like, yeah. Two things. One is... Oh, sorry, go on.
I was about to say, this is that... There's like the clue there on the rock. But if you just went down there and you phased them animals or what and that to get to it and didn't solve the, you've got to be a better person, you wouldn't get the clue. You wouldn't actually get the clue because the clue
exactly. That's the point, isn't it?
That was the whole.
Yeah.
And all stakes are kind of like taken away by the fact that they've said they're big. Big crap, like they're always fighting against the terrible twins or whatever they're called. They're always like fighting against those two, catching up with them. And then at the end, the trail people go, it's like, don't worry, we're gonna let them in anyway. It's like, well, then there's no jeopardy at all. And the subplot, which we haven't talked about, is also that the breakup between
Adira and Cray.
And it's like, I mean. We just had last episode. We just had a breakup.
Yeah, exactly. Like nothing.
You had it. Like Reno and all that. When she's talking to Stamets, she's making out that it's not to be a big deal when if they break up or anything that and all that. And then it was nothing when it actually
happened.
Are we breaking up? Yeah, we are. Okay.
I mean, for the amount of tension that was behind it, you may as well have had it happening off screen. So basically, last week's episode, when they talk about it, it's like, I'm in a real tough time. Me and Gray broke up. And then actually be a bit awkward when they meet.
That's maybe, it. Like,
and then, then them agree to be friends would be actually have more impact.
Yeah,
it almost feels like, why did we bother bringing Gray back? Because he doesn't really do anything in this episode. The emotional impact on Adira, who, you know... Gray's a guest character at this point. Adira's a main cast member, so presumably we're going to stay with Adira and see the aftermath of it. But there doesn't appear to be any aftermath. It was just the most amicable breakup you've ever seen. And also, I feel like when those two characters were first introduced, there was a really good chemistry that came across. Like, they were... these kids who were madly in love and it was all tragic. Whereas I just don't feel that anymore from them. There's just
Yeah, I mean, I loved the character of Gray. I thought that relationship was really interesting in the last series. The last two series. But like
Doesn't feel... Sorry, yeah.
I forget the last series still.
It's almost
I'm saying that was a rare highlight. Their relationship was probably one of the most interesting things in it.
It's almost like, oh, we need to tie up loose ends. But this didn't feel like a loose end. No. And it doesn't feel like...
For how they did it, you could have just done it off screen. And it'd actually have worked better if they broke up off screen, like you say.
Yeah, and then it was, is it going to be awkward?
You have Stamets and Culver having to comfort her and make her feel better. And
comfort them.
No comfort in Adira because things are up on trail.
Adira's them. Sorry, it's what? No, we're just working with it. No one's having a go at you, mate.
Right, I've always said that. I have no problem with any of this, but I am no good at getting the names wrong.
No, exactly. But
again, no one's having a go at you, mate.
We just don't want anyone to think we're doing it deliberately, which we're not.
Yeah.
And like you say, if they'd gone and they decided to be friends, that'd have worked better. But this, it was pointless.
It was.
It was literally pointless TV.
It didn't. Yeah. And it was almost like there was meant to be a big emotional bit at the end where Gray says something like, oh, don't worry, I'll still always be there for you. And then at the end, they hold each other's hands. But that didn't feel like a big moment. No.
Thing is, I mean, I don't want, like, I mean, put this out in front of the street. There should not be any expectations, extra expectations on a relationship involving someone non-binary on Star Trek. However, this is the first one, so you kind of want to nail it. You kind of want, from start to finish, for it to be really good, to show that they're just like anyone else, yeah, and it is normal. And, like, sort of fucking up the ending a little bit here kind of a bit takes away from that. Like, I want it to be so good because I do believe in, like, more representation, the more it normalizes.
Yeah.
RTD's talked about it with Donna Noble's daughter being non-binary, or, you know, being, I mean, they talk about non-binary, but I think she is female and used to be male, certainly being trans. And they talk about that very openly. And he says about, like, you know, just put it out there and it will be normalized. And I think that's what Star Trek's done really well.
Maybe that's,
and just screwing up the ending, I just didn't like. I don't know.
Maybe that's what it's doing, though. He's showing, like, look, a non-binary person can have the most boring, mundane relationship. Yeah, I'm being sarcastic. I don't think they deliberately wrote this to be boring and mundane. But if one chose to read it that way, they could do.
Yeah.
However, all of this gets us to, and I predicted this, I'm claiming this one. I said when we were talking about let's have better villains, why don't we use a species that we know but haven't seen? I said, what about the Zencafé, who are mentioned in Deep Space Nine and we've never seen? And next week we're going to Zencafé space because that's where the next clue is.
I thought we were going to Beta Zed next.
No, we're going to Zencafé.
We've never been going to Beta Zed.
No, Mullen Lack
went to Beta Zed because they didn't read the fifth line.
I thought the idea was we were going to Beta Zed as well as... Oh.
No, we're going to Zencafé right. space now, which I will be interested to see because in the books, which, as we know, are non-canon, the Zencafé are a lizard species. So I'm just curious to see whether they make that canon or not, or whether they do something completely different with them.
That'd be cool. We did see a lizard representative around the table in the negotiations. They could have.
So
be just, nice way to bring that in.
Just because it's one of them species that are mentioned, but we've never seen.
This also works that we can get to see Saru doing his ambassador stuff.
Exactly. Because that could be
we
good.
Need to let the diplomats work on it first.
They did say that. Good
and
point.
And actually give him a real challenge for a. Okay. And it'd be a nice way to bring him into the episode.
Yeah. So we're going to reintroduce
you've got an
Saru
to
the plot. Excellent.
Yeah, I mean, I do love. I have no problem with them making Saru separate to the crew, but keeping him in the episodes like they are. I think that'd be wonderful. And again, it gives him a kind of landing point in the end of the series, which I think would be really nice.
But this isn't like, because you've mentioned this, and it's been like Zencafé, we all know we've never met them, and there's diplomatic reasons we've not met them from previous seasons. So we've got this new diplomat, and it gives a perfect excuse why we're sending him as an ambassador.
Yeah, it's great. Yeah, I'm all for it.
Yep. But the ever-present threat of Maul and Lack is there because Adira now has a tracker on themselves. So
yeah, well, that just showed that the Trill were actually really, really shit at keeping them off the planet.
Yeah, because Maul even got a knitted robe.
Yeah, she went to ceremony. It's like, yes, they will not get past Trill security. They cannot approach this planet even.
I mean, I can't see how they get on the planet without a riddle.
but that's the problem. They didn't turn up and ask for the clue. They just snuck in.
One thing we weren't thinking about, them being dishonest.
That's it. These evil scavengers. They're not evil. I don't know. Maybe they're evil. Maybe they're not. I don't know. I think they're unremarkable as elements anything. Of this episode were. But I do think the central idea was good. I like that it's got a bit of a slower pace than we've had for the last two episodes, less action heavy. I like the stuff with Rayna. So I think there's a lot of good in this episode, but there's also a lot of, eh?
Yeah, I'd agree. And it's, kind of, oh, sorry.
I was about to say, Discovery has a big problem. The first season, not counting the Klingons, we were really hyped for because we had Star Trek back on our screens and we enjoyed having Star Trek back. Season two was absolutely outstanding. Season three was good. Season four was abysmal. And it's really got to come back from that down. It's not getting back to its highs it had.
I mean, the one thing I would say, this series is at least the main idea of the plot, I think, is really good. I love the fact of bringing the progenitors back. Like, so even though they're not quite nailing the episodes, at least it's kind of watchable because it's an interesting concept.
It's
you've got some interesting performance elements. It's more watchable than season four, I will say.
It's also nice that for the first season ever of Discovery, this is not galaxy-threatening quest. Like, if it could be used as a weapon if it falls into the wrong hands, but we are not dealing with something like...
It's not an immediate threat to the galaxy. The burn,
we've got no warp drive, and it's going to go off again and destroy all our remaining technology. We've got the Ten Sea who were doing something.
That's a very good description of season four, yes.
We've got the Red Angel, which turns out to be fucking Burnham anyway.
And we've got the first series, the Spore Drive, like the spores were dying and was going to, mycelial network was going to wipe out the whole universe as well, lest we forget.
Yeah, that's what I mean. We've
got, I'm just saying.
This is the first season that we haven't got, where they're chasing after. They're on another season. It is the same format where you're on a season-long quest to solve the puzzles, to find the answer, to solve the ultimate problem.
Yeah.
But at least this one isn't that. We have to do it to save the universe or save the galaxy.
I will say, though, they've kind of sort of gone the other way, though. This is the reason for all of life. Like, it's still got to be the biggest thing in the universe. It's more like, that's my one complaint with RTD and Doctor Who. It's like, I love Russell T. Davis, but it's always got to be the biggest thing ever. It can't just be normal stakes. This is still massively huge stakes. It's not.
Yeah.
I just like to have it like the Klingon War in the first series was just, it was a war between the Klingons and the Federation. It was between them, still huge stakes, but not the whole universe is going to end if it doesn't happen.
Yeah,
something like that would have been nice, but it's like, like you say, at least it's a step in the right direction. It's a step
absolutely.
Away from the universe ending. I was going to ask something before we wrap everything up. Slightly on a tangent, but as I've said over the last few weeks, I've been watching back the first series. Do either of you know, was there ever any memory beta extended universe books where they actually explored the Lorca? At all, because
there was I've not read it. I read the first one, but I remember the second Discovery book that came out was about Lorca and Captain Georgiou years before, so that would have been Prime Lorca.
Wiped out in the second season.
Yeah, the first book became non-canon immediately. I mean, non-canon anyway, but
it became
irrelevant immediately.
Possible. Yeah, I mean, it's like I do love that first series. I love Lorca in it, but it's like it seems so weird that they say that it was a transporter accident, a la the first crossing, which we know about from the original.
Yeah,
series. But you never get to see anything of Prime Lorca. Like, what happens like when he beamed into the other ship? Like, we don't see that he dies. Like, it's kind of implied.
I think the door was left open, but it was just one of them.
The door's been left open. It's never been picked up.
Yeah, it feels so unsatisfying. The second series would have been the perfect time to bring.
I mean, he could turn up in Strange New Worlds, conceivably. He could turn up in Section 31.
It's one of those that if they've continued Short Treks that you could have brought.
Yes, that would have been good.
But I want to do
a
main
little
episode.
Short trek of him arriving in Mirror Universe and what happened to him.
Yeah, that would have been cool.
You could have, but I want a main episode because it was such a good character, great actor, perfectly portrayed.
Yeah.
What was he like as a good guy? I would love him to have the same cunning, but just to use it in a nice
way. Like it. There we go. We'll start the campaign for Bring Back Lorca.
Again.
While we're speaking about Discovery, I thought it was to ask.
One last note then before we go. The Armageddon Factor is a Doctor Who serial from Tom Baker.
Keith's Time? Part of the Keith's Time, the first one in the Keith's Time.
It was the sixth and final serial of the 16th season.
The end of the Keith's Time. That's
so end of the Keith's Time, yes. Doctor Who and Romana won. So there we
go. That's where it's coming from. I mixed my
you would think one of us would have remembered that, but we didn't. Anyway.
Well, no, it's because we all love both. So, you know.
There you go. And Armageddon is used a lot in titles of things.
Yes.
Okay, so we'll wrap up there then. Next week, we're going to see the Zen Cafe, maybe. In the meantime, you can
will
get...
Will they be lizards?
Who knows? You can get in touch with us at RetrekPod. We're RetrekPod@gmail.com. You can follow us on all the socials, including Retrek Model Studios, where Elliot has begun work on a very special project.
I am building the Doomsday Machine, so... I've got the headpieces ready now to fit in. So we're getting an idea of length that we're going to be going for. And I'm going to wear this as a hat.
Oh, yeah.
Excellent.
Well, it's the only way you could top Madame Titsfit from last year, which if you don't know who Madame Misfit is, look her up and imagine Elliot in that gold uniform with fake
boots. It does fit.
There we go. So that's we can all keep an eye on that build. What have we got going on the Dr. Squee show?
Man, I am so pleased with this one. YouTube.com/Dr. Squee tomorrow at 7. I am talking to one and only Holmes Under the Hammer King, the People's King of the Jungle, Martin Roberts. He talks a little bit about Holmes Under the Hammer and, of course, being in the jungle on I'm a Celebrity. But also he talks about guest safety he's here to talk about. He's done a kind of recently... they've commissioned a survey all about kind of getting your boiler checked out, making sure you're safe in your home. So him and an expert from the gas safety called Rob, he's there as well. But yeah, we do get into Homes Under Hammer, which has been going for 20 years now, as well as I'm a Celebrity. So it's a real good time. Please do tune in for that.
And yeah, until then, let's fly.
Let's fly.
And drag on, LLAP.